Welcome to All the Bits, a podcast about board games, the community, and all the lovely, lovely bits. We are Sean and Michelle, and we hope you enjoy the show. On today's episode, we drive by Lorenzo Il Magnifico, unlock, and more. We shine our BGG thread spotlight on the strangest reasons for Board Game Night to be canceled. We explore the amazing and awesome bits in Manhattan Project Energy Empire. We tell you what we're looking forward to coming up. And finally, in our hot topic, we discuss how we justify our purchases. So, Michelle, we made it to episode 2.
We did. We're big time now. I think episode 2 is makes it official.
Does it? We don't have to get to like episode 3 or 4.
No. We need to get like episode 2 rings or something.
Rings.
Like we made it. We made it.
So how did you feel about our first episode now that we're pros at this?
Oh yeah. No, it was good. It's kind of scary to put it all out there, but I've been having a lot of fun with it, so I'm curious to see where this goes and how long we last.
That's true. And you're doing a great job with our Twitter, which is
at All the Bits Pod.
And what kind of stuff are you tweeting about? Because you're doing a majority of that and you're doing an awesome job at it.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm just taking, basically when I play a game, I tweet about it, take a photo, as good of a photo as I can. And when I can think of it, I highlight some of the bits because we are all the bits.
Do you have something to do right now?
Oh, I'm like, take a photo? Bits, 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 bits. Took me a little bit. That might become second nature in like episode 5 or something.
Okay, so we have to make it to episode 5 so there's no awkward pauses as I wait for you to sing your song.
Yeah, and that'll be like the silver episode.
The silver
episode. I don't know, what's the 5-year anniversary? Do you know what the 5-year anniversary material is?
I don't know. I'm coming up on 4, and I know that's like linen. So, but I don't know what the 5
Let's
is.
See. 5-year anniversary.
Are you Googling it?
In front of me. I can look it up.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Is it silver?
This is important. We need to prep for our 5th episode. It is wood.
What?
Oh, that's perfect.
There you go. That's perfect.
We'll just make a big wood bit.
Well, you can design something and then take a picture of it and tweet it for our 5th episode.
With all my carpentry skills?
Exactly.
Beautiful.
Exactly. So another thing that I realized from episode 1 to 2, Michelle, is that I have an insatiable thirst for knowledge.
Okay.
And I have a question that I really have been wanting to ask you.
Uh-oh. I'm scared.
You might even say it's a question of the episode.
Whoa. You're getting ahead of yourself there. We're only like a few minutes in.
Well, you know, I want to get this going because, you know, we had a little bit of quick banter, but I have to...
You're itching?
I'm itching to satiate my appetite for knowledge, I think.
Okay. I don't know if I'm a bank of knowledge for
you.
It
doesn't matter.
I'll give it my best.
I just really wanted to know that if you could be any single bit in all of board gamedom, what bit would you be?
Oh, that's a good question.
I know.
I think I'd be, this is kind of boring, but I think I'd be a player mat. Like a well-designed player mat, because there would be a place for everything. And I like that, because I like to be organized. Yep. That's pretty lame, but it's true. Little place for every little bit. And then I get all the bits because I'm the player mat.
That is true. So you would be like, you have this giant, ginormous player mat, right? So you'd be one like that as opposed to one that's like the size of...
No, like for a specific game. So like, you know, the player mat is like, put your buildings here and, you know, like what Orleans has or... a lot of Felds do as well.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
Yeah, like your player mat, like in front of you for a game where, you know, every bit goes in a specific spot. It's so nice. I love playing games with those.
Oh my goodness. And okay, so on that note, do you have any of those like fancy neoprene ones for specific games? I know like Splendor has one and
No, I don't. I've considered it, but the space, the storage scares me away. What about you? Do you?
I don't. I have one, just like a generic one I got at Origins a few years ago that I never actually used.
Okay.
But I don't have one, no.
I have printed some custom player mats, like not the neoprene ones, but the ones I was talking about for Troyes and Bruges, and they make the game better. They do. They just do. So, for all you print people out there who like to print things from Board Game Geek, I recommend those two files.
Nice,
I have
okay.
a question for you as well, sir. I think I know the answer, but I want to know why.
Okay.
Okay. Metal coins or miniatures?
Miniatures.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I figured as much, but why?
Miniatures are, well, I don't know. Metal coins is the one bit that I'm kind of, I could take or leave, mostly just because there's a perfectly viable real world equivalent to it. I do like the feeling of it, but miniatures, just like especially like well-detailed miniatures, but not like what's that, the company that makes Warhammer, like those ones. I don't like those things that you have to snap apart and glue together and all that stuff. I like just like
Neither do I.
Yeah, I like just like the CMON ones or whatever company makes just a nice detailed miniature. I just love that. I love the
Yeah.
figurines of them. I kind of collect like those pot figure things, so that's
Yeah.
maybe something to do with that. They're kind of like
Yeah.
giant nerd miniatures, so
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. They're basically the same thing.
pretty much.
Would you ever paint, do you
No,
think? No?
I'm not. I wouldn't mind it. We talked last week about about container with the giant boats.
Yeah.
If there was a miniature that was like gigantic that didn't have a ton of detail that I could paint a nice one, I would potentially do that.
Like a
But
ball with a happy face.
yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I don't, my hand kind of shakes a little bit, and I wouldn't be happy no matter how perfect it would be. I just wouldn't be happy with it. That would be the problem, and it would drive me crazy.
Yeah, I think that would drive me a little bit crazy as well. I'd see all the imperfections because it would not be good. I do not have the patience to make it perfect. So I'd end up I know towards the end, I'd just be like, oh, whatever. I'll make this all brown or whatever. And I hate it.
Yeah,
Yeah.
totally. All right, it's time to get into some drive-bys. Pew 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 pew. Pew
Oh, dear.
So, as I've seen on our awesome Twitter, which is,
At All the Bits Pod.
you have been playing an awful lot of games the last couple of weeks.
Yes, I try.
What is your first drive-by?
My first drive-by is Lorenzo Il Magnifico by, and I apologize in advance, Flaminia Brasini, Virginio Gigli, and Simone Luciani, and published by CMON and illustrated by Clemens Franz, who is probably, I would say, in my top three illustrators. I love his work. As soon as I see his art, I just immediately enjoy the game a little more. Anyways, oh, go ahead.
So I have a question. So in terms of your favorite artist, like in terms of dudes with their arms crossed at their chests looking sternly at you?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Like Vincent Dutrait is up there, and he's definitely. I'm thinking of Medici right now. Yep, that's pretty accurate. Yep. So, Lorenzo Il Magnifico is very Euro-y. It's a lot like Grand Austria Hotel and Voyages of Marco Polo. It's a worker placement game. but it has dice as well. And there are three colors of dice, and each one of your workers is associated with a color of die, and that gives them their strength. So you roll the dice at the beginning of the round, and the orange die, if it's five, everybody has a power of five. And you're basically placing your workers to get cards, and different cards cost different amount of powers. So, you can only get the last two with a five plus powered worker sort of thing. And you're basically getting cards to run different mini engines, add modifiers to your abilities, that sort of thing. Collect resources, turn them into things. Pretty standard stuff. But as is typical, I find with these designers, it's a very limiting game. You can do very little. You want to do a lot. It's very harsh. And I absolutely adore it. I've heard people say it's a little bit harsh at two players because basically, like I said, you're collecting these cards to kind of build an engine, but there's only two spots each round that allow you to run your engine. And there's kind of two main different types of engines, so there's really only one spot for an engine, and one of the engines is your resource maker. So in a two-player game, you're basically vying for that spot, and you need resources to do anything in the game, so you're both going to have a little bit of a resource engine. So it's kind of weird that way, and it's kind of harsh, and normally I wouldn't like that game. That type of game, but there's just something about it that is just really interesting and keeps me coming back. I love the way the worker powers work. I love the huge dice. The engine's really neat. It's a good little game. I'm quite pleased with it, and I'm looking forward to many, many more plays.
Nice. And have you played it? Because I know we talked about this last week. You play a lot or a majority of games at two players. Have you played it at more than two players?
No, and I've heard a lot of people say they do prefer it at the 3 to 4 player count simply because that one spot that allows you to run your engine, there's another spot that actually opens up. So with the 2-player game, you cover up a bunch of spots. And so in a 3 to 4 player game, multiple people can run their engine in a round. So I've heard it's still an extremely tight game, but it's not like, oops, sorry, I guess you can't get any resources this round, or oops, you can be super inefficient, which is, not what you want to be doing in a tight Euro. So yeah, I have not played it at 3 to 4. I would like to try it at 3 to 4. But even at 2, like normally it's not my type of game, that harsh blocking. I'm a bit of a Care Bear like Rotto. But it works. I really enjoyed it.
That's awesome. I'm looking forward to playing that at some point.
Yeah, we should definitely play it together. I feel like every game we talk about, we're like, "Oh, let's play it."
Definitely.
We need to find some time. What about you? What's your first drive by?
Okay, so the first one that I just want to talk about, you spoke about one of them last week, is the Unlock from the Unlock series from Space Cowboys. The one I just had the opportunity to play through was the Formula, and this was the third one, so I've played through all three of them now. I enjoyed the Formula. I don't think I enjoyed it as much as the Island of Dr. Groose. I definitely enjoyed it more than the Squeak Sausage whatever one. Although I didn't find the art particularly anything special. Like I really the sausage one I quite enjoyed the art was a big hit for
What's the
me.
theme on this one?
You know,
Is it a lab? A science lab?
It's a science lab and you're trying to get a formula and escape with the formula from a
Okay.
bunker. It didn't really feel like, whereas I thought the other two of the unlocked ones, what I really liked about them was the theme. I felt there was theme. This one I felt didn't really have much of a theme.
So I'll probably like it.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely perfect for you. Yeah, it's nice to have played all three. I know there's a few more coming out soon, so I'm looking forward to that as well. And it's nice because I think each set of them I've played with kind of a well, one I played with just my wife, but then the other two I played with different groups of, not hardcore gamers like us. And
okay.
Everyone really seems kind of amazed that you can do this type of thing in a box format, which always makes me happy to see. Right? It's like that.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like that first time you play Pandemic or you play like another super gateway game with someone and you see their reaction.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, yeah, I mean, I enjoy that they didn't quite enjoy it as much as the Island of Dr. Grooves, but an enjoyable experience.
So when, I've heard, I don't know how many unlock, but there are, but let's just say there's three more coming, and there's three more exits coming, and you're given, whatever, $50. Well, wait, that could probably buy them all. You're given $30. What do you buy? What do you think you're going to get?
I probably go with the unlocked ones. Or unlock. Not.
Yeah.
Unlocked. I enjoy it. I enjoyed the card thing, the card mechanism of it. I do like the app integration. I'm not too thrilled about the way the clue system works with it. Having played all three, I think 90% of the time you just get clues that you already knew. So you're not getting a huge help from it. I do like that, and I do like that I can, like, you can just potentially leave it with someone, right? Like that other one I played, and then I just passed it on to you. Whereas, you can't really do that with the exit game, so I would probably go with Unlock.
Okay. Yeah, I'm curious to try another one. I'm withholding, I mean, obviously I have an opinion, but I'm withholding in complete judgment before until I play another one or two, so...
All right, what's your next drive-by?
My next drive-by is Sea of Clouds by Theo Riviere and published by Yellow. I picked this one up actually on a whim. It was Canada Day a week or two ago, and one of our local game cafes, Metal Galaxy, had a sale, so I thought I'd go check it out. And the owner recommended this game to me. And so, yeah, so I bought it on a whim, which I never do, but I wanted to support them. So I picked it up. And it's a, of course, it's a gorgeous game because it's from Yellow. But it's a push your luck set collection game that is pirate themed. And basically, there's three piles of cards out, and you have the opportunity to, on your turn, you look at the first set of cards, pile of cards, and you decide if you want to take them or not. And then if you don't, you add another card to that pile. And then you can look at the next one, and you can decide not to take it, and then you add a card to that one, etc. And you can decide to take nothing, and then at the end, like after looking at the three piles, you just take the top card of the deck. And the back of the cards are distinct depending on what they are. So there's like rum and pirates and artifacts, like different set collection basically. There's also a mechanism, so there's about 16 rounds, so a round just consists of everybody going through the piles and taking cards. And at the end of, I think there's three rounds that it happens, you fight, and whoever has a higher strength than pirates gets to take the action on each of their pirates. So some pirates might say steal a coin from every other player, gain two coins, and coins are 1-to-1 victory points, that sort of thing. So it's really light, it's really simple, it's gorgeous, and it even works at two.
Nice.
Okay. And I had a blast with it. Like, it's, I didn't go into it with, you know, any crazy expectations because I hadn't done any research, right? And I tend to like push your luck games. Like, it's fun. And yeah, it just worked. It's nice. It's quick. It's both Rich and I enjoyed it. And I think we played it two or three times now. And then I think it'll just be one of those games that comes out, you know, fairly regularly, but doesn't really leave my collection. It was really cute.
Nice. I think from what I've seen of it, the art is really fantastic.
It's beautiful. It totally flew under the radar. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a fairly new game. I think it came out in 2016. Let me just look that up. And I think I heard like a few rumblings about it at the very beginning when it was first released, but I don't even remember seeing a lot of reviews. Yeah, 2016.
Nice.
Yeah, it's even got decent ratings. It's averaged 7 7 rating on BGG, so it's not, it's just, I don't know, there's too many games, right? So, yeah.
You just gotta go with what you like.
Or just go on a whim.
Yeah.
There, two people recommended it to me, but the owner was like, this is a great game. It's one of my favorites. It gets a ton of plays. I was like, all right, sure, let's do this. Yeah. Which I never do, and it paid off.
There you
That
go.
does not mean I will continue to do that, however.
No.
All right, what do you have? What's next?
All right, let me get actually I finally got this one just under the radar before we actually recorded Las Vegas the Card Game by Rüdiger Dorn from Ratzenberger, and I've had this guy sitting sealed on my shelf for a while.
I ordered it for you, so I know how long it's been.
Exactly, totally. But I got it with the express purposes that it's a game for me to kind of pack up when I travel, when I go kind of go away for a while. And I do. I'm lucky enough that I'm off in the summer, and I'm currently in beautiful St. John's, Newfoundland in Canada right now, visiting family, and then I'll be in Montreal before I finally get back to Calgary. So this is about like a 6, 7 week chunk that I'm away. So this is more foreshadowing. We'll talk about later how I've packed up these games. But it was the game that I got specifically for travel and to play with travel, because I love, love, love Las Vegas. It is my go-to gateway game. It's so much fun, and it's such a nice introduction to area control and to that whole mechanism that I just love it so much. So I've only played it once with three players, but we kind of played it, and it was interesting. I could definitely see this getting more and more play. There's significantly less randomness to it, because what you're doing is you get a deck of the setup and everything and how you win and whatnot is all the same as regular Las Vegas. I'm not gonna get into that, but where it differs in where regular Las Vegas, you're rolling your dice. With this, you get a deck of 30 cards, and I think you draw up to 5 cards, and then you have different options. So from your hand of cards, you can either play one card, you can play two different cards, or you can play cards that are all the same. So let's say three threes or whatever. And they're numbered 1 to 6, like the die. So because obviously you get to choose what you do, there's a little bit less randomness because you don't
Right.
have the die. There's also the fact that once you can, the round is over. I think there are 4 rounds in the game, but a round is over when you've played 8 cards. So you have to kind of manage, well, am I going to place these four fours here to potentially win this? But that's going to take away half my buying power, or half my the money I can spend, the dice or cards that I can spend each turn. So you kind of have to manage that stuff. So I really definitely want to play this some more, just because it does. Now it doesn't have that tactile feel of rolling the die, which is one of my favorite parts
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
of Las Vegas. But what I do like about this is, unfortunately, they're not bits, which is annoying. They would be awesome if they were bits, but they give you a safe in the martini glass card to put your kind of cards that you've discarded or your money that you've won to put it under to hold.
Okay.
It'd be so awesome if there was like a bit of a safe or a bit of a martini glass. Oh my
Yes.
God, that would be so amazing.
Yes. That would be super
But
amazing.
it's definitely nice. I mean,
Yes.
and the
That,
cards
yeah.
are have a small, they're that euro size card, so they're a little bit smaller. So obviously it helps for packing that you can pack more. And yeah, definitely looking forward to playing more of it, to getting a lot more play of it over the next few weeks.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. There's a few games that I've done that I've noticed. I don't know if you've ever played the two dice games Quix and Quinto, but there's in German only Das Kartenspiel. There's card game versions of them, and Quinto is one of my favorite dice games, like for what it is. And I thought, it would be pretty interesting to play those games with cards, just yeah, because they up the strategy. Yeah, I'd be interested to try one out. I haven't played a dice card game, so.
And just one more thing before I kind of before I forget, that I actually liked about this above all else, all these card implementation of board or dice or whatever games, they usually take up a ridiculous amount of room. We talked about this last week with Camel Up / Cup. And I think Castles of Burgundy is kind of the biggest culprit of that for the amount of space that it takes up. But the nice thing about this is it's got a very manageable footprint.
That's nice.
So
I guess I have played Castles of Burgundy, the card game, which is a card dice game. My last one I'm going to talk about is A Feast for Odin. So that's by Uwe Rosenberg, published by Z-Man Games. And I've gotten in a few plays of it. I feel like just saying it's a standard worker placement Uwe Rosenberg game. Like, that covers so much of it. The theme is Vikings. There's like 60-some worker spots. There's a few different paths to victory. There's, you know, boats and you can go out hunting and whaling. And you can settle other lands. And the biggest, I don't know if I would say the biggest draw, but you get these polyomino, I believe they're called, pieces, basically treacherous pieces, and you have a board of a grid, and you're trying to fill up this board using these pieces that you get to not lose points, basically. And the other neat thing about the game is that each resource has 4 levels of upgrade. So you can start at a base and then you can upgrade resources up until a 4th level, and they obviously become worth more. And also the base bits cannot go on your board, so you have to upgrade in order to place them on your board. It's a huge game. There's lots to it, but that's kind of the basic basic description of it. I really like this game. I'm not good at it, and it's one of those games where you just feel I've only played it twice, and every time, at 3-player and 2-player, I've wanted to go back, and I'm like, I just feel like I could have done that better. Like, I still don't feel like I have a grasp of the system, if you will. So I'm, you know, instead of me deciding when I'm playing the game, okay, this is what I'm going to try, I almost feel like I'm still stumbling around in the dark a little bit with that game, which makes me want to come back for more. That being said, I almost feel, and this feels blasphemous considering the name of our podcast, but it almost feels too much. Like, it almost feels a little bit ridiculous. And it was the reason I had purchased this game, because normally, you know, Uwe Rosenberg, I'm in. But it's just so much. And it kind of felt like that. Like, you know, when I sit down and think, okay, what do I want to play? So I'm borrowing your copy. You know, it's like, I've got Fields of Arla, I've got Caverna, I've got Gates of Luoyang, and I'm sure there's one or two more I'm missing, you know. And it's just like, those give me the same feeling and the same amount of satisfaction, and they're way easier to handle and manage. Plus I have a broken token insert for Caverna, so and I've made a custom insert for Fields of Arl, so that helps, right, with setup. But yeah, I don't know, at the end, I kind of just feel like it's a little bit silly every time I play that game. Okay, the 2 times I've played the game, I've just thought, you know, it's a bit much. And I think that's enough to kind of keep me from it, which is silly, but that's where I'm at with it. But interesting game. Great game. No, go ahead.
It can definitely be overwhelming just because of, you know, however, I forgot, was the 62, 64, 69, something like that. Potential options during the game. There's definitely a lot going on. One thing I do like about it, that I do enjoy about it, though, despite so much going on, it's a very, I find it anyway, like, it's very clean what's happening. Like, it at no point, like, it reminds me of Orleans, kind of in that way, that you have this book with all these millions of steps and all this stuff going on, but kind of once you go through it, you're like, it's not really that difficult.
So let me clarify. It's not a bit much in terms of the decision space.
Yeah.
Or the depth of the game, it's too much in terms of just the game, the bits. It's too much. It's so much table space. It's so much setup. It looks like my table, playing mat just like threw up bits from like my 2 years of gaming, like the last 2 years of gaming or something. It was just like, I'm sorry. That's kind of where I'm at, which is shocking for me because I really do love bits. But that's what I mean when it's too much. And I agree with you. Like once you kind of get down the system, and the worker placement spots are, you know, fairly similar. It's not complex in that way.
Yeah, fair enough. I do agree with that. Like it's again, when I play it at my place, it has to be played on the counter. We can't even play it on the table. It's just there's not enough space.
Yeah, it for barely it. Fit on my mat. Barely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I have one more drive-by, and actually you could probably talk about this more than I can, because it's your game that we played after our last recording.
Yes.
But I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think I've heard of it before you brought it out, but I hadn't played it and never given it much thought, called Kashgar by Gerard Hecht from Cosmos. And this is kind of, I guess it's a deck building / tableau building game. So you're building your deck on your tableau. And you're trying to, I guess, buy estates or properties. Is that what they are?
Fulfilling contracts.
Fulfilling contracts, right? Like
the other Euro mechanism.
The other I was trying my best to set you up there. but I really enjoy the mechanism of kind of having to, you have your card, when your card comes up on your tableau, then you're moving it to the back, and then you have to wait for it to come around again. So you really have to get to thinning your deck and thinning your spots as quick as possible to get those cards to come around, and you manage your resources so the cards come up, and it might give you a certain amount of wheat and wood and whatnot, so you have to move those up on your track for how many you have, and that helps you fulfill your contract. So I just really enjoyed how quick and smooth it was, and it, mm-hmm. you know, it's very solo-ish, aside from, you know, sniping contracts from the other player, but I really enjoyed that, and I found it, quite a nice game, but it's not really available in English,
no.
Is it? No way.
No, it's not. You can buy the German version, and then there's a fellow you can contact on BoardGameGeek who has an English translation of all the cards, and he has them uploaded actually to one of the printer studios, and you can print it from there, which is what I did. Yeah. It's kind of funny, actually. I bought Kashgar because I had it on in the background. I was watching Rotto's review of it.
Uh-huh.
And Rich, this was before he'd really seen a lot of Rotto, and he said, "This guy thinks this game is really great." He was super excited about it. And I wasn't going to say, "Oh, well, you know, it's most games." So I was like, "Oh, really?" He's like, "Yeah, we should get it." I'm like, "Okay." So that's how I acquired Kashgar. So thank you, Rotto.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Now my husband, Rich, knows better. So
your slimy tricks.
Yeah, I can't get away with it anymore.
Nice. Okay. So, I think it's time to shine a spotlight on some Board Game Geek threads. What do you think, Michelle?
I couldn't agree more.
And what's our sound effect for that?
Oh, ah!
We're still getting the hang.
It's a good spotlight.
Yeah, still getting the hang of doing all the sound effects and whatnot, especially since they're natural, they're not computer-generated or anything.
It's hard work.
Yeah. So in our BGG, in our Board Game Geek thread spotlight, what we do is we look for a thread on Board Game Geek, on somewhere on the forums, that seems interesting in some way to us, and we talk about our favorite posts from that thread. It just so happens that this particular, our choice this week, which is The Strangest Reason for Board Game Night Getting Cancelled or Moved, was actually, you pointed this out in the BGG newsletter.
Yeah, it was their top thread, I believe.
Which I didn't even realize was a thing, so.
It's a good newsletter.
So much. I know, now I'm actually paying attention to it.
Oh, good.
But just in case you didn't do that, or you wanted a selected topic, some selected posts from there, we thought we would do this. So I'll go ahead with the first one, which is probably my favorite one, actually. So the strangest reason for Board Game Night to get canceled or moved, Army Mutiny, about 6 weeks ago. Although we did consider meeting up to play on another day when we were told to stay away from the office. This was courtesy of David Herbert Coleman.
I'd like more backstory on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cute. Okay. This one's cute. Clogged toilet, couldn't correct by use of plunger, reconvened at another residence. And that very authoritative post is brought to you by Doug Hook.
Game day canceled because the pub we played at was closed due to snow. This wouldn't be a huge issue, especially in Canada, where we're recording from. But, he goes on to say, there was no snow on the ground, but it's Atlanta, so the thought of snow closed the whole state down that weekend. And this was from Wolf Brother.
I wish. We'd never have to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even in August, we'd have snow days. That'd be amazing.
It's snowing outside.
All right, this next one is brought to you by Steve B. And he had to cancel because there was a bomb under a car next door. That's terrifying.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, sure. Scary. That's a valid reason to cancel Board Game Day.
It is pretty valid, actually. Strange, but valid.
Yeah. This one I don't know if I agree with. I have to learn Spanish. And that was from Zur.
That's my favorite one.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of board games that you could probably use to learn Spanish with. Just saying.
I love it. All right, this next one. Tornado, period. Flash flooding, period. Wasted, belligerent brother-in-law, period. That's brought to you by Josh. The wasted, nice. Belligerent brother-in-law. Nice.
All right, our last one, and this is from Joseph Engelhart. I'm just going to kind of pick this up halfway through because it was a really long post.
It is long.
But it's still really long, but it's a funny story. That night, on my way to his parents' place, so to a friend's parents' place, I start getting frantic calls on my phone from the rest of my group who had already arrived at my friend's parents' house. Turns out, Buddy didn't actually check with his parents to see if we could use the house. Also turns out, his parents were on vacation and had rented the house out. My friend walked into a house full of some random family's food, clothes, and luggage. Only then did he think to call his parents. Thank God those folks weren't home at the time.
Can you imagine?
You know, I actually think it's weirder that he walked in when they weren't home because that's kind of like breaking and entering or, you know.
Good story, Joseph. Yeah, that would be super creepy. That's like, that sounds like it's straight out of a movie.
Totally.
I would just sit down and start playing my game. And then when they walked in, I'd be like, hey, do you want to play? Weird, no?
I thought you were going to say I would just start playing my game, and then it would basically be like Goldilocks and the Three Bears, but with board games. So you start with like the gateway game, and then you go up to like the heavy game, but the medium weight game is just perfect for you.
There, that sounds just right, Sean. Perfect. That sounds just right. Bits.
So this is our segment where we've been talking about bits a lot this episode, actually.
We have.
This is where we really focus on bits. And much like last week, I'm kind of going to cheat again with what I want to spotlight, just because this has been important to me. As I mentioned before, I am on the road for the next while, so I like to pack quite a few games with me. And in the past, what I've done for games is I've taken a box from a game, and I've taken components of various games and just put them in that one box. But that never ends up good. I always come back home with a damaged box. And I haven't learned my lesson until this year. So the way I came about this case that I found is I've been looking for something to transport my games in, and one thing that seems very big kind of on Twitter and Facebook and the interwebs is the Quiver case. Have you seen that?
Yes, I have.
It's
very nice.
It's very pretty. It's very nice, but it's also seems quite hard to get in Canada.
Yes, very expensive. And
even when I was thinking when I was in the States a few weeks ago, I was like, oh, maybe I'll get it shipped to my hotel and get this. Still quite pricey.
I was like, okay,
let's see what else is out there. So it took me a while, but basically what I discovered is if you go on to Amazon and just like type in Cards Against Humanity cases, you get tons and tons of options.
So I don't know if I want to spoil this for you, but I did the exact same thing. I had the exact same journey, and I ended up with the exact same product as you did.
Did you? That's hilarious.
Yeah, when I went to Arizona.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I was shocked. I had no idea all these cases were out there.
So the one I settled on, which apparently Michelle has too, is the Caseling Extra Large Hard Case CAH, Cards Against Humanity, is the one and it's kind of a rectangular thing, and maybe I'll put the link in the show notes just in case we're not actually promoting this product or anything, but I just actually really like it. It's a rectangular square thing, and I currently have, and what's nice about it too is it's got little dividers, like Velcro dividers,
yes,
in it, so I think there's like 6 or 8 of them, so I've been able to pack like probably 8 to 10 card and dice games, as well as like all my Paco Game games in there from the second edition. So I have like tons of different stuff in there, which is really nice. And it's nice and anyway, I mean, I've just used it this once, but it's nice and thick. The material on it seems pretty sturdy. I had it in my check luggage coming here, no issues. It's got a nice little carrying handle with it. So in terms of, it may not be a bit, but it's a bit transporter, so that will do for
it's
this.
It's kind of a bit.
It kind of is. The Velcro dividers are bits.
That's true. That's true. So, good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was really happy with mine as well. I usually take a laptop box, not a bag, like a laptop box that my laptop came in, and I made foam core dividers, and I used that for 2 years, and it was... I didn't really like it. It worked. And then, yeah, this year I was like, enough is enough. And I found this one and I packed a ton of games in mine, like a ton, including like First Class with the boards, Bloody Inn with the board. Yeah, the top of mine, I'm not sure. Maybe we have slightly different ones. Mine's not rectangular. It's the square one. But mine has Velcro pieces at the top as well. So I was able to kind of, like, put in some boards at the top. It was great. Very
yeah,
happy with it.
That's another thing. The top has a fair bit of space in it, so you could definitely put like boards, instruction books. I have like my Saint Malo things in there and whatnot, so you could definitely put a fair bit in there. So what are your bits that you want to talk about this week, Michelle?
I've decided I would like to spotlight Manhattan Project Energy Empire. I got this one to the table. Yeah.
Some awesome bits.
Good bits. Yeah. Yeah. I got this to the table again last week. I don't know what day it is anymore. Yes, last week. Love the game. Like it more every time I play it. But they have some really, really great bits. First, I'll talk about player mats, because I already talked about how much I enjoy player mats. And this is one of those games where there's little boxes for everything, and I just enjoy that. I don't know why. I think it's because I'm organized and I like things to have a spot. But they're really nice player mats, lots of color, great art. Then there's also large, chunky custom dice in fun colors, which is always good. And I have really no idea why they went above and beyond for this, but they have these little brown oil barrels that look like miniature oil barrels that, in my opinion, fit right in with the Stonemaier treasure chest quality. They're gorgeous. They're heavy. they're detailed. Like even the top has a little like tab, you know, like a square where you would the opening would be. It's really nice. And then the steel is like wood bits shaped like steel bars, but they're actually painted a very shiny silver. So again, like they could have just, I don't know, you know, done what all games do really. But they just went above and beyond with it with the bits, and it, of course, for me, it's a great game, but great bits make a great game even greater. So yeah, I played this the other week and I was just like very much enjoying it. They did a really good job. It's a bit pricey for what it is. Like the game, I think it comes in at about 60 Canadian, 58, somewhere around
Which
there.
for our American listeners is like $10, just FYI. So it's a pretty it's a
Yeah.
bargain for
Thank you.
Americans.
Yeah. Oh, so frustrating. But yeah, so, you know, it's a little bit on the pricier end in terms of, you know, a standard midweight euro, but you know, I think it's nice. It makes the gameplay even better, like I said. So that's my all the bits spotlight.
Nice. Next up.
Batter
Better. Well, let's get into this whole baseball thing again.
Oh, should I use all my newly acquired baseball terms? I don't remember any of them. I remember first hitter. Was that a
No, that's
thing?
not a thing.
No? Oh, no, really? I thought. Okay,
But
never mind then. I give
I
up.
will let you go lead off in telling us what you're looking forward to.
I have a very exciting first up in my next up, and it is dun, 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 Merlin by Stefan Feld, published by Queen Games, which is shocking. Yeah, there's a new Stefan Feld game coming. His last one was Oracle of Delphi, which I'm still somewhat lukewarm on. This one is coming out, I believe, at this upcoming Essen, so October, November-ish. There's not much about it in terms of mechanics, but or mechanisms, but there are three photos online on BoardGameGeek. And there's dice, which makes me happy. Typical Feld. And looks like there's maybe a bit of a rondelle, and a player board with a bunch of crazy icons, a la Feld. Yeah, I'm really excited. I love Feld. I'm just surprised that Queen Games picked it up. I don't know if they've done any other Feld, but I don't typically associate them with that caliber of designer. Actually, no, that's not true. I don't know. It just seems like their games fly under their or are not great all the time,
They too
really.
mainstream for you?
No, it's not that. It's just it seems like I'm sure I have some Queen games that I like, but there just seems to be a lot of Queen games that, A, they're always the games that go on for super cheap because nobody seems to buy them. And I think they've made a lot of mediocre games. So, I'm sure they've made some great games too. I don't mean to bash a publisher, but in general, I seem to see a lot of discounted Queen games. Anyway, so that was a bit of a surprise for me, but I am super excited because I heart
Yes,
Feld.
you do.
Yes, I do.
So my lead-off hitter, if you will, is actually something I've never done before. I pre-ordered my first game. I have never
Wow.
done that. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Clap, clap.
And it's Wasteland Express Delivery Service by from Panasaurus Games by Jonathan Gilmore, Ben Pinchback, and Matt Riddle, who, Michelle,
Oh, goodness.
you accused me of not knowing who Matt Riddle is this week
Oh, yeah, that's
because
right.
I mentioned that there is a somewhat well-known hippie slash surfer slash UFC fighter slash professional wrestler named Matt Riddle, who I quite enjoy, who's very funny, but
He looks interesting, I'll say
yes, I sent
that.
you pictures of him, just so you could be aware.
Yes.
But I did, in fact, know who Matt
Yes.
Riddle is because I've been very interested in this game for quite some time. And what really pushed me towards pre-ordering is I saw a thing on their BGG, or it might have been Reddit, or actually maybe both, but from Panasaurus Games, where they said that it's they're out of it and that it's selling out and they're going to have limited copies at Gen Con, and that it's, if you do want, they won't have a restock until November or something. So I was like, oh, maybe I should get on this and pre-order it, because I don't know if you've seen it, but there are tons of bits in it.
I haven't. I'm going to look it up right now.
Tons of bits. They have the, actually similar to Feast for Odin, the trays to put the bits in, which is amazing.
Nice.
It seems very high quality, and it's a pick up and deliver. It's more of a really, I think, thinky, in-depth pick up and deliver game set in in your post-apocalyptic world, which the video game Fallout 4, or Fallout, the Fallout series, is my favorite video game series, so I really kind of like that. And the big part of any Fallout game are your fetch quests and your pick up and deliver and your delivering crap around. So obviously any game set in that type of, with that type of theme is totally gonna do it for me. So I'm super...
And there's miniatures.
There are some miniatures in it, yeah, and it's all kind of, I think they say, it's just all deluxe. There's no one version better than the other, and that's, it's a bit pricey. It's up there in terms of price, but it's very high quality.
The art is phenomenal.
Yeah.
I love the cover.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous. I don't know, do you know what style, what that's called?
No.
It's like, it looks, I don't know anything, it looks comic booky to me, which is about as far as I can go in terms of art genre.
Yeah, it's like cartoony, cartoony, but it's definitely...
I know Man vs. Meeple came out with a video for this, so I am going to watch it, but I'm going to guess it's not my type of game. But I'm not sure.
I would say it's not.
You don't think
it's not your type.
Miniatures,
of game.
Dice rolling, pick up and deliver.
But yeah, it's definitely not your type of game. And also, it seems like a bit long. I won't spoil that video for you, but I just, and it's kind of what I expected for it to be. But geez, I'm just like totally into it. And for me, like, I like having a couple of pick up and deliver, those types of games.
Okay.
I'm fine just having that. So this will definitely be one of mine.
There's did you know it's a narrative story that unfolds over the course of 10 sessions?
You know what? I did not know.
And it
that.
Begins with a beautifully illustrated comic book. So maybe I wasn't so crazy to say it's comic booky.
Apparently
look at me.
Not.
Yeah, that's cool. So it's
Yeah.
Neat. All right. What do I have up next? Oh, Legends of Andor by Michael Menzel and published by Cosmos. I've had this game for a while. I've played it a bunch of times, never finished it, but I've been really itching to pick it up again, simply because I really like the game system. I'm not someone who entirely cares about theme, but when I'm playing Legends of Andor, I'm sucked right in. I think more than any other game that I can currently think of, more than Arkham, more than Eldritch. I feel like I'm there. I get really into the story. I love the way they've set it up. So I do have the second big box expansion. So I think that was kind of my impetus to try to get back into it. And the other night, Rich said to me, okay, we'll play a game, whatever game you want. And normally I would pick a long Euro. But I decided to pick Legends of Andor because he's not a big fan of the system, actually. It's like, it's okay, but he'd rather play other games. And I really, really enjoyed it. I had a ton of fun. I think we played scenario 4, where you're going into a mine and there's fire. And anyways, we won, and I had a blast. It was just a ton of fun. So I am very much looking forward, as my next step, to playing this game again. And that's why, even though it's kind of outdated and it's older, it's on my list. There is another big box expansion coming out for it, though, and apparently that's it. Like, the designer had a story arc in mind before he created the game, and so he's like, that's it. But we've heard that before. Dominion, I'm looking at you.
Yeah.
So, who knows? But yeah, I just really, really had a lot of fun. Yeah. Nice.
All right, so my next thing, and really the only other thing I really want to talk about, is I'm going to Gen Con. Yay. I'm super excited. Yay! I'm, like, official. I have my hotel room. I have my plans and everything. I'm, like, super, 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 super excited.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I have a feel. Once I get there, I'm gonna, my head is going to explode, and I'm going to lose my mind, but for now, I'm very excited. As I'm sure you're aware by that gigantic Google Docs I shared with you about all the games I'm looking forward to.
I already had a spreadsheet started, so I was very happy to amalgamate ours.
Yeah. So I'm definitely looking forward to that, and I'm sure next episode I'll really just, that's all my next up will be talking about Gen Con stuff. Since right now I'm just kind of really in the planning phase of what I'm going to be doing and stuff I'm interested in and whatnot. So, yeah, that's super exciting.
Yeah, I'm jealous, but I will be living vicariously through you. I expect a lot of texts and photos, so.
Yeah, and lots on Twitter.
Yes, at AllTheBitsPod. Just going to plug that in there.
So
I know, look, you've trained me well.
You're getting so good. It's shameless self-promotion.
Huzzah!
Nice. Did we have something for Hot Topic? I can't remember.
Yeah,
like a song or anything?
Oh.
Did we have a...
Hot...
Did we have anything?
I don't remember.
All right, whatever. I can cut it in from the other
okay,
one.
Okay, sounds good. I don't remember, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I don't either.
Yeah.
All right. Welcome to our hot topic for this episode. And the reason, well, this was on our list. We have a nice Google Docs that we kind of go through with different subjects and different things that we want to talk about on the show. This one, the reason this one kind of jumped out at me, what we're talking about today, is kind of like a therapy session. So we can have a therapy session as we discuss how we justify our purchases. This is a
good prep for Gen Con as well.
You know, that's part of the reason, I won't lie. I'm actually very, very nervous about that. I'm almost thinking like I don't want to take credit cards with. When I go to a casino, for instance, I have lots of self-control, and I take a certain amount of cash and I leave my credit card at home in the hotel or wherever. I'm kind of thinking I need to take that approach with Gen Con too.
It's not a bad idea, Sean.
But yeah. So, Michelle, how do you justify your purchases?
I mean, that's a pretty loaded question. it really is. Because it's really a conversation I have with myself. But first and foremost, I do have a budget, a monthly budget, which I won't share what it is.
Aww.
But I do have a monthly budget I keep with. Mm-hmm. And I usually don't go over. And if I make, like, I do sell games. If I sell games, the money that I get for the sale goes towards the budget for the month.
Okay.
So that's my biggest thing. I mean, if I can afford it, why not, right? My husband always says to me, it doesn't go bad, and if it's not hurting anyone and we can afford it, why not? So he's far too supportive, might I add. So that's a big thing. I also, I do this thing, and I know Chaz Marler mentioned this in one of his videos as well, where when he sees a game, he imagines an experience with a specific person, and that actually is his impetus for purchasing a game. And I've had that so many times. Like, I'll think, oh, you know, so-and-so would really like this game, or, oh, this would be great, you know, for when my family gets together, or, oh, my niece and nephew would just love this game. And so... Sometimes I use that to justify a purchase. Like I just have this like image in my head of what that experience would look like. I've learned over time that usually that experience doesn't happen, or if it does, it happens so rarely that it's not always worth the purchase. So there is a little bit of self-talk I've learned to give myself around that, but it's still certainly a factor, especially with Rich. Like, if I see a game that I think he might actually like, it's pretty hard for me to say no, because I'm always kind of looking for that game, and I don't think I'll ever find it. That he'll just be like, yeah, this is really great, you know, like, let's play it again. Yeah. The other thing too, like, I know some people are like, oh, this game is going to round out my collection, or oh, I don't have this mechanism in my collection. I don't do any of that. I'm like, I don't care. If I have 50 worker placement games, but I love playing them all, giddy up. Like, I don't do any of that. My collection to someone who does do that is just like a chaotic mess. Like, wow, your player counts are all over the place. You're heavy here and super low here. Like, what are you doing? I don't care about any of that. It's all just to me about other things. And I do a lot of research. Like, I watch a ton of videos, I read comments on BGG. Sometimes I'll ask about it in Reddit. So I do all of that as well, but yeah, really, it's like, okay, can I afford it? Okay. And I also like to play games solo. So now, and more games are coming out with solo play, but if there's a solo play, I'm like, well, I can play it solo. And for some reason, that is like a good justification for me. So yeah, that was a long answer.
But you had a lot of
But that, I think that's kind of, well, it's a big self-talk, right? I have a lot of games. I buy a lot of games, and sometimes I do feel guilty about it, but ultimately, I mean, it's where I spend my money. I don't really spend my money elsewhere. And, you know, I'm not hurting anyone. We can afford it. Like, I've never like put my family in jeopardy, you know, because I had to get the latest stuff on Feld. So, yeah. What about you?
I think budget is the biggest, and to me, it's in terms of it's now. I've tried really, really hard in terms of like to justify my purchase. It's like, okay, I have to play a game, and I won't buy a game unless I play it.
Oh, I remember
Yes,
you
and
saying that.
I've stuck to that for the most part. However, much like you, the only times I won't do that, or like I'll come off that, is if I sell games, and then I'll try and potentially use it, unless I'm using it for something else, but I'll use that money potentially to do something new. But anytime I make an order, and I don't make orders like I used to, anytime I make an order or I'm buying specific games, it's games that I have played and tried. I think, and that's how I justify it. It's like, I know I like this game, I know it's going to get played. My collection has shrunk quite a bit. I'm still hoping to get it down, but I'm at the point now where when I do get a game, I'm trying to be very confident that this is a game I like and that this is a game that will get to the table a lot. Much like you, I do kind of fall into the thing with my wife Kathleen isn't a huge gamer, so there will be games that I'll be like, oh, she might like this. I think she'll like this. I'll definitely buy those blind on the spot. And usually, if it turns out that she doesn't like it, which sometimes that does happen, I'll, sell it or trade it or do something with it. I also try and really justify, and we're in an age now where it is quite easy to trade and to sell, and with Kijiji and with the BGG Marketplace and Facebook and just all these other.
Falcon
Yeah, Falcon for
and
us
flea
here.
market and auction, yep.
So it's not. Sometimes you have to hang on games for a while, and for me, space is an issue. So it's a pain in the butt to hang on to games. But I'm able to justify like that. Like if I have a game and I know it's not getting played, I can sell it. I can get rid of it. Yeah, that's my main thing is kind of just my main justification is almost like I'm importing and exporting things. So like whatever's coming,
Yeah, it does help.
in terms of like you mentioned, no niche or mechanism, I'm very similar like that. I have, I would say 15, 20% of my collection, maybe 15% is all deck building games. You know, I love deck building games.
Okay.
So I don't necessarily think I look at that. Yeah, I think my main justification is really just trying to, that, okay, if I buy this now, if it doesn't work out, I'm going to get rid of it. It's going to go back out.
Yeah.
And I tell myself that.
Rich will say that to me too, like, wow, you can always sell it. I'm like, that's true. I can always sell it. Yeah. And I think you and I are different. I remember we did talk about this one night where you said, you know, when you're looking at your collection, if you haven't played a game for a year or two, you just get rid of it, right? So for you, it's really important that the game hits the table. I mean, for me, it's important that the game hits the table. But if I don't play a game for a year or two, I'm okay with that. As long as I think I'm going to play it and I want to play it, I'm okay with that. Now I have more space. So maybe that's part of the reason. And I think just because I always hear my husband going, oh, they don't go bad. So I'm like, well, I'll play it eventually. But I really like having a ton of variety. Like, I play games almost every day in one form or another. And, you know, for me, it's just I get sick of the same thing over and over again. And I love being able to just have a plethora to choose from. And, you know, some game, oh, I haven't played that in a really long time. Let's pull that off the shelf and dust it off and play it. I'm okay with that. But yeah, you're not, hey?
No, I'm...
No.
Especially now at this point, I'm like, if it's not getting used, it's like, I want to get rid of it because, yeah, I would...
And you're... Go ahead.
I should have had an opportunity to play it, and I probably did at some point, and if it didn't get out, there's probably an underlying reason behind that. So I'm like, all right, if I've had it, me, I'm like, six months to a year is kind of my upper limit. I try and stick to 6 months as much as possible, sir.
And your collection is small enough that you can cycle through it in that time?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I mean, ideally to me, I want to get my collection to the point where it's small enough where that's never an issue, period. And so, I mean, because we just, you know, there are certain games, like, again, like Dominion, I've played over 100 times, and that'll never, never be an issue. And there are definitely older games that I'll play over and over, but especially, again, kind of like most of us, when we get into the hobby at the beginning, we just kind of go crazy with the stuff.
Yeah, I did. And,
I mean, I've only really, we talked about this last episode, I've only been in the hobby, what, like 3 years or so. So I feel like I'm still kind of weeding out a lot of that stuff. I feel like I've probably weeded out most of it, but I still have a few of those games to go that were bought like that.
Me too.
That first 6 months where everything is just new and shiny.
Yeah, you don't really know what you want or what you like. And everything, you know, you don't know. Like, I remember when I first got into the hobby thinking, I can't wait until I understand the different reviewers' tastes. Because if you hear Tom Vassell say, this is a good game, that means something to me now. At the beginning of the, you know, when I first got into the hobby, that didn't mean anything to me. It meant that some guy likes a game, you know? So, but I didn't know, like, Sam's taste versus Tom's versus Z versus, you know, all the other reviewers out there. And now I do. So now it's like, okay, you know, even just, you know, the reviews, you can kind of filter through and say, okay, well, you know, yeah, you might like it, but I know that our tastes don't really align. So, you know, and this game doesn't look interesting. So, you know, but if there's a game that doesn't look really interesting to me, but I know a reviewer's tastes align with mine and he's like raving about it, I might take a second peek. Right. So, yeah, I'm happy I'm at that point at least, right? Where it's a lot easier to filter through the like onslaught of new games.
Yeah, totally. And I totally feel like that too. And maybe more so for myself, that I kind of know what I like now, and I won't necessarily just go after stuff that potentially looks interesting. It'll be stuff that I either want or stuff that I know I'll like. You know, like for instance, you mentioned Merlin before, and I enjoy Stefan Feld, but I don't necessarily need to own any Stefan Feld games. One, because you'll own them all, so I can play them. True. But two, it's just not something that I feel I would, that I feel like I need to
play a lot.
Yeah, like I have Castles of Burgundy and You know, I don't know what else I need. If I need to own any other ones, I'm happy not. Doesn't mean I don't like it. It's just I know for myself I don't necessarily need that. Now, if I played it and was like, right. Oh my god, this is amazing, and I love all these wizards and whatever else the game is about, and I love whatever is going on in this, then I would be, okay, maybe I'll purchase it. All right, so that was episode 2 of the All the Bits podcast. I hope everyone enjoyed the show. Michelle, did you enjoy the show today, our fake radio show?
I did. And I'm also looking forward to going back upstairs where it's a little bit warmer.
Oddly enough, I'm very much looking forward to leaving this room, which is absolutely boiling hot, and I'm sweating all over the place. So, we usually do this show together, our one episode that we've done, and our practice.
Yeah.
And our practice episodes, but now we're doing it remotely just because I'm on the road. So I'm glad no one is seeing me, how bad I'm sweating, that I'm absolutely just covered in goo. It is absolutely gross.
I'm glad I'm not there.
Yeah, no, I'm glad too. So we hope everyone enjoyed the show, and we'll see you again next time. Yes. And don't forget to check out our Twitter at
AllTheBitsPod.
And our email address at
AllTheBitsPodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.